Good evening, everybody. My name is Brian Charlson. I'm speaking from Watertown, Massachusetts, just outside of Boston. I'll be hosting Tuesday Topics in Paul Edwards' absence this evening. The last time we were together, we discussed topics that might be of some interest to one and all. And there was one that was pretty important to me, because here in Watertown, we have been dealing with issues associated with it, well, pretty much for the 20 years that I've lived here, but more importantly, during the past 2 years, while the major intersection in the center of my town was reconstructed and accessible pedestrian signals were installed. There are three people in this country that one might turn to ask to speak with us about that kind of a topic. And I was pleased that we were able to secure one of them to be with us this evening. Her name is Janet Barlow. She's from Atlanta, Georgia. And I wondered if, just after I go through the general rules of this evening's discussion, if she'd step in and give us a brief bio. Remember that Tuesday Topics begins with about a 30-minute interview between the host and the guest, and then we open the floor to those who are in attendance to ask their questions and perhaps even give us a few comments. We'd like to thank those who are recording the show this evening, those who will edit it into a program, and George Bias of Talking Communities for providing us with this service, allowing us to do Tuesday Topics each week. So first, Janet, I wonder if you might give us a bit of your professional background, and then we'll launch into the general topic of accessible pedestrian signals.
Thanks, Brian. I'm really glad to be here with you tonight, and looking forward to our discussion. I'm an orientation mobility specialist by training. I've worked for over 30 years in the field, mainly teaching in the Atlanta area. I had left direct teaching about 5 years ago to do research, particularly research on access to intersections for individuals who are blind or visually impaired. A lot of it has focused on accessible pedestrian signals, but also I've been involved in some research on roundabouts and other types of intersections and modifications to intersections. Started out in 1992 while I was working as an orientation mobility specialist at the Center for Visually Impaired in Atlanta, with working on some research on detectable warnings, and have kind of continued with an interest in research and improving the pedestrian accessibility issues over the last several years.
Again, let me speak first by how things are here in Watertown. We've always had what we referred to as kind of the bells of St. Watertown, that is, audible traffic signals at a major intersection where we have six streets come together. One coming straight off a bridge, two with median strips down their center, one with a wheelless trolley or electric bus passing through it, and two other streets that link up with one of the spokes coming into the center, only a matter of a few yards short of where the whole mess comes together. You can imagine with that description that knowing when was the right time to cross in which direction was kind of important. During our reconstruction of the square, it turned out to be more a beautification project than really a dramatic change, we were successful as the Watertown Commission on Disability in getting our town to include audible traffic signal upgrade. How would you describe the major features of what one might acquire as an audible or an accessible, rather, pedestrian signal?
Well, certainly some of the major features. First major feature is that you want some indication of the walk interval. And the newer types of signals provide both an audible and vibratactile indication of the walk interval. The other features that are very important, I think, and in the newer systems are available and were not available in many of the older systems, are things like push-button locator tones, so that you can find the push buttons they've put there that you're required to push often in order to get enough time to cross the street. One of the things I wanted to comment on, just when you said audible traffic signal, is a lot of the change of the name from audible traffic signal to accessible pedestrian signal comes about from two reasons. One, the accessible pedestrian signal relates to the fact that they are not just audible. They have the vibratactile information. They have a tactile arrow on them as well. So there are other types of information provided by the APS, or accessible pedestrian signals, besides just audible signals. The other part is in the traffic engineering community, there's been a move away from calling on traffic signals because they're separating the vehicular signal and the pedestrian signal when they talk about them more and more, because often the signal for the vehicles is not at the same time as the pedestrian signal. So there's a change in traffic engineering language that also is reflected there in that change of language to accessible pedestrian signals. And I just kind of thought of that as you were speaking a minute ago and wanted to mention that.
You never can tell when the words being used are significant or just somebody got tired of writing the same phrase over and over again. So accessible pedestrian signal, APS, is what we're referring to, at least in terms of the audible component of it. It consists of two parts: the sound that indicates when you have the walk cycle and the sound that indicates where the push button is located. Are those always in two different locations? Or I think I've seen them where they're overhead for the sound that indicates when you have the walk cycle, and of course down at button level. And I think other cases I've seen them both down at the button level. Is that true?
That's correct, Ryan, that in some of the new types of signals, there's some manufacturers that produce them with both sounds coming from the actual push button location, and other manufacturers that produce them where there's the locator tones comes from the push button, and then there's an overhead sound for the walk indication. In general, the draft guidelines being proposed by the Access Board leans more towards, or really almost specifically specifies, that all sounds should come from the push button location, and also specifies the location of the push button much closer to the crosswalk. We're not going to get there for quite a while of reconstructing intersections, but the goal is that the push button, if there is a push button, would be close to the crosswalk and the sound would come from that location, so you're sure that it's the one for your crosswalk, as opposed to it being overhead, loud, and possibly echoing around off of buildings, maybe not being real clear which one it is. So the other part of the changes in the accessible pedestrian signals in the recent years is a change in the kind of the thinking about volume, keeping the volume lower in general, and having them so they respond to ambient sounds. So they'll be quieter most of the time, but if a truck goes by, they'll get louder in response to that. So there's, you know, a lot of different things going on with that, but often the goal in general of the Access Board is that they would be located at the push button eventually.
So in describing as close as we can get to a general description of the perfect APS, it would be placed on a pole in close proximity to the crosswalk. The button itself would put off a sound that would allow us to locate where the button was when we got close to it, but not so loud that you would get it mistaken for other things, like other signals on other corners of the intersection. That the button would both make a sound and vibrate at the time that you have the walk signal or walk interval. And this is one that I found really amazing here in Watertown, and that at the point of the button, there's also an arrow indicating the direction the button applies to. So location of the pole, push button that both makes sound and vibrates during the walk interval, or the period of time at which you should begin crossing the intersection, and as a locator tone, and the volume to be variable according to traffic background, and lastly, an arrow indicator indicating when it's, or which direction that particular button applies to. Are there any other features that we should be looking for in a quality APS?
Brian, you've covered the basic features of them. There are a number of other things that could be provided and are provided in some systems. Often when you first press the button, there might be a beep or some kind of sound just to let you know that you've actually pressed the button or called it. There's some signals provide a speech message at that point that just says wait. There's also features in some APS that provide a speech message that provides intersection information in response to holding the button down for between 1 and 3 seconds. It might give the street names, might provide, say, something like crosswalk angles right. There's a recommended format for any kind of information message in terms of what's how the street should be identified. It should say something like wait to cross Howard's at Grand or something of that sort. But that's another feature, would be some other information. But that is an extra. You've listed all of the really kind of basic required features, I guess, of the Access Board guidelines at this point.
So there's a number of issues there for me. One is there research evidence that suggests that the sound should be located at the button level, or is the jury still out on that?
We do have some research evidence that indicates that it's a better recognized as being the proper signal when it's located at the button level. And we do also have some research evidence that it's somewhat better, maybe better, as a destination corner. You can't, because they're quiet or only intended to be heard, the locator tone would be what you'd be hearing as you're crossing the street. It's only helpful in the last bit of the crossing, but you might be able to hear the locator tone as you're crossing the street. And there's some evidence that having that from the lower location makes it a little easier to localize on and aim straight for, rather than it being overhead and possibly almost aiming over your head by the time you get close to the corner. I'm not sure if that quite made sense, but there is some evidence that it's helpful for that purpose as well as for identifying the walk interval at the beginning.
If, as we're advocating for traffic, these APSs in our communities, we describe what it is that we would prefer. Every time we get five blind people in a room together to describe what they'd prefer, I don't think they'd come up with, say, six features they'd all agree upon. Everybody wants to pull close to the crosswalk. I don't think there's any debate about that. Everybody wants the arrow pointing in the direction you're supposed to walk once that time has arrived. Everybody wants there to be locator tones that you can easily identify, but that aren't so loud that they distract you from across the intersection and distract your neighbors. And I think everybody would agree that when possible, having them be vibratory as well as audible is a good thing. Is there anything that people disagree on? For example, when it's appropriate to have the spoken word audio information?
I think there's a lot of question in terms of what still, particularly among individual users, about what the walk interval information should be, whether it should be a speech message or whether it should be a tone message. There's also been, from what I can understand, a fair amount of maybe just confusion or maybe downright disagreement about the volume of locator tones. And in general, my kind of advice is to go with the locator tones being quieter rather than louder, even if you have to really listen hard or get close to the corner or be at the corner before you really hear it, because it just has the potential for, if it's too loud, and particularly if it's too loud when it's first installed, to have neighbors get all upset about it, and the locator tone being something that gets you know, on their nerves. So I think it's important to look at volumes and to be careful about volumes of the devices as they're installed, and sometimes to maybe almost err on the side of being too quiet rather than too loud. The other question that you mentioned there that is a big question is the whole what should the walk message be. Some of the research we've done recently has indicated that really a tone walk indication, a tone message, is much more localizable and more detectable in traffic noise than a speech message, and is probably the better way to go. Many people like to hear a speech message, and the walk message often is something like Howard, walk sign is on to cross Howard. But there is the potential for confusion of speech messages, and they're hard to make intelligible in the presence of traffic noise because of the range of the traffic noise and speech. So there's some research basis for supporting tones rather than speech, but I think a lot of people like speech messages for the walk interval.
Volume is something that's created quite a furor in my town. apparently the default volume of the signals, when the company came and did the installation of them, they simply left them at the default volume, and that volume is loud enough that you can hear the locator tone for the button on the opposite side of the street. And if it's loud enough to be distracting to a blind person, it's certainly loud enough to be distracting to the local business owners or homeowners in some cases, who are located anywhere near these intersections. There are some, I understand, where they can automatically detect the level of background sound and adjust their volume accordingly, and others that are set to a volume and stay that way 24/7 as they're being used. Is there any studies dealing with or any evidence dealing with the value of one versus the other means of controlling the volume?
There hadn't been much in the way of studies in terms of the question you're asking and controlling the volume. I think in general, all of the new types of signals do respond to the background noise, but they're set for a range to start with, and they're set for a response to ambient sound to start with. And you have brought up one of my kind of pet peeves with some of the manufacturers is that often the default volumes are too loud. And I've been trying to work with some of these manufacturers and encouraging them to set the default volumes to be, you know, much lower and to help them understand why it's better to have it quieter, because people who are blind don't want to hear, you know, 8 locator tones at every intersection when you're trying to sort out the traffic and everything else going on there. You don't need to hear the locator tones on all corners. So I've been trying to work with the manufacturers on that issue, but I think hearing more from towns and installers and individuals who are blind about it may be what the manufacturers really need. So I would encourage people to get back to them about that, because I think really you've hit on the big problem, and it's the default volume setting should be lower to start with. They can always be adjusted up, and some are very easy to adjust, but it seems that they are being shipped with volumes that are louder than most of us would like to hear.
I'm glad to hear that our experience has not been an isolated one. We're very concerned that we, in fact, may be burning bridges with our neighbors over the volume of these accessible pedestrian signals. Is there anything that talks about the difference of the tone itself? When I was in Melbourne, Australia, everything had a ticky or tick, tick, tick type noise, while the ones that were installed here are a longer, medium high pitch noise. And we have some that are referred to as chirpers that do more of a cuckoo type noise. Is there any research to suggest which of those is the more effective?
There's some research, but really what it came down to was that all of them were adequately detectable. So it really is pretty much a matter of preference. Now, just to be clear, is any one of the accessible pedestrian signals manufactured in the U.S. right now can have any kind of sound you want? They're just wave files. So if you find you like the clicks better, and you as a community or individuals want to advocate for a ticking sound as opposed to a beeping sound, I think it's a good idea. I'd like to say we're going to come down with something that's all the same everywhere, but I'm not seeing that quite yet. What we do have in terms of push-button locator tones is a standard that they will repeat at once per second. And that repeating on a once per second time is the standard. So there's no standard for what kind of sound they make. And it may just be a matter of it beginning to fall out in response to people preference. I personally have heard all kinds of different sound, different kinds of beeps and different kinds of ticks, and it needs to be one that has a range of frequencies so that it is detectable in traffic, but that can sound in a lot of different ways and still be adequately detectable.
You had mentioned, and I have to admit a certain prejudice in this direction myself, the idea that perhaps signals will eventually become kind of standardized in their tone and location, etc., so that as I move from community to community, I don't have to relearn how these particular ones work as opposed to the ones back in my hometown. The Watertown intersection I described a moment ago is being very, very complicated. The original bells at the square, prior to the more modern ones being installed, actually were installed in such a way that crossing one street was more of a low-pitched buzzer, while crossing a different street was a pulsing, higher-pitched bell, and crossing another one was much more of a chime kind of sound. So we used different sounds to indicate different streets, and that was really good as long as you were going through the town that you were familiar with. Are there any standards for when you have a number of signals in close proximity, how one would go about indicating when one particular set of sounds applies to one street while another set of sounds applies to another?
There is not, at this point, Brian, a standard. But there are some guidance that's out there and that's becoming more used and useful. One of the things that is a big change is that, in general, the idea is to separate the push buttons, put them beside the crosswalk they control, and not necessarily to use a different sound for each direction or for different directions. In Sweden, Australia, and most of Europe, for many years, they have just used a rapid ticking sound or a rapid beeping sound for the walk interval, a once per second locator tone for the time that's in the flashing don't walk or don't walk time, but it goes quite rapidly at like 10 repetitions per second during the walk interval. And they've used the same sound for all directions, but have paired it with the tactile arrow, a push button speaker, and a location that is beside the crosswalk. It's often, it's not necessarily on, say, the always the right side of the crosswalk. It's on the side of the crosswalk that's away from your parallel street, so that there's a consistency in how they install the APS speakers and push buttons in Europe, Sweden, Australia, that we haven't seen here in the U.S., but is the direction that the Access Board has been leaning in some of the guidance they've been writing, and is the way I'm leaning based on the research I've seen as being a system that really works quite well. Getting consistent pole location is something that we've really got to work hard with the traffic engineering community on, and we've got to understand what that means, too, that it's not always on the right side. It's on the side away from the street. So the guidance and direction has generally been toward the same sound for all directions, but pairing the tactile arrow and the location with that sound so that you don't hear, you know, you don't hear the sound for the other street right beside you or very loudly there. You know that it's the one you just were standing, it's the one you're standing by.
How much have you've seen some intersections that have been fitted with APSs? Have they all been done well by the construction companies and installers, or are you seeing a pattern of poor installations?
I'm seeing a pattern of poor installations, absolutely terrible installations. Good equipment installed poorly is useless. It's really important to monitor, provide feedback. We wish we could get better installations, and I've seen some. But in general, most installations I've gone and looked at, I've seen issues that really should be corrected and need to be corrected, and have had to follow up on that. And I think it's really important for all of us to carefully evaluate, you know, do the arrows point in the right direction? Maybe not. That's real common, that they're angled out toward the center of the intersection or something, or pointing back in the bushes somewhere, because I don't think the installers really understand how the equipment is going to be used, and it's makes for a great deal of possible problems when they don't know what they're trying to do. I think that also relates to sometimes the volume problems we've seen, that the installers don't understand that people who are blind aren't deaf. And so they're trying to, you know, think the louder is better. So I think the installation is something we have really got to continue to monitor and give feedback and try as much as possible to help people understand before they install equipment. But my experience has been we don't always get asked in advance. We just find out about them later.
That, again, brings me back to my beautiful Watertown Square here. They carefully installed what appears to have been pre-holed posts into the concrete as they redid the square area. And then when they came in to install the signal plates. They had the arrows on them. The holes were not set so that they would end up, once the signal was attached, pointing in the right direction. So then I get into a discussion with the Department of Public Works about what it would take for them to take those signals and reorient them. Now they've got a hole in that is no longer being covered by the signal itself, and they have to deal with a plugging situation, and they seem very, very reluctant to engage in putting a plug into a formerly, well, or perhaps even originally misplaced hole. Have you ever seen any where they did some patching and shifting of these?
I have. They have, in a couple of places I've been working, I've seen them moved, particularly for some of our research projects. We were pretty insistent that they be correctly installed for the research we were doing. It is not as difficult as sometimes some people seem to make it sound. There is a problem at times of aligning it. If the hole is very close to where it should be but over just a little bit, then they end up with too big a hole and have difficulty with getting the device to be securely mounted, and it would be good to have it be securely mounted. You don't want it wiggling around. In my experience, it's well within the ability of a typical signal shop or signal repair person to manage to reposition the devices, to shim them if necessary, and to install them correctly. They just need a little guidance in doing it. I hear what they're saying to you, but I don't really believe that it's that big a deal. You can cover holes with all kinds of other materials, and I know I've seen it done.
It's about time now for me to shut up and allow other people to ask their questions. I'd also ask that at least the first time you ask a question that you'd identify yourself as well. The floor is now open. Who'd like to ask a question of Janet?
Hello, this is Gary Wood from Lansing, Michigan. I'd like to thank you for having Janet on tonight and thank her for coming on. It sounds like an interesting idea. I think that this is a good thing for blind people, really. Sounds like signals are good.
One of the things that's happened in the last few years is that what traffic engineers are doing in terms of the traffic and signals for traffic and the number of turn arrows and various things going on at crossings means that often the, and right turn on red, means that often the cues that we used to use and were quite reliable when I started teaching 30 years ago have gotten muddied a lot by the width of the street, the various turn arrows and turn lanes and things going on with that. And that's why, in many ways, I've become more of an advocate for accessible pedestrian signals, because what the traffic engineers are doing is often only allowing one time in the signal cycle that they really intend for pedestrians to cross, and otherwise they may have a green arrow, which really is traffic has right of way rather than pedestrians at that time, so that the skills that we learned many years ago, you certainly need to use and need to listen, but I tend to say that the accessible pedestrian signal is giving you one more piece of information. Seeing a visual walk signal for a sighted pedestrian shouldn't tell them they have the right to go without looking, because there might be a car turning right, but they do have the right of way. But just like a sighted person should look to make sure some car is not running the light or turning across in front of them, a person who's blind should still be listening for traffic and paying attention. That's why I like the quieter signals myself, in that they allow you to hear the traffic as well without blasting over all of the other sounds at the intersection.
Ms. Barlow, this is David McElroy of Visalia, California. I would like to briefly comment that I think one of the things that you're missing that is also an added reason why we need the accessible pedestrian signal is the increasing use of a hybrid vehicle, and they do not idle. A hybrid vehicle does not idle when it's standing still at a light. It simply does, and you might hear a noise or not. But going to my question, we live in a town, Visalia, California, about 100,000 population, and very few active blind people, my partner and myself being the only two that are really active and out there. We have had a request by another individual for an accessible traffic signal on her street. Now, Pam and I managed to get the state to do some on our boulevard, our main boulevard, which happens to be a state road, and they put three in there. We got those ourselves. But the city engineer is very reluctant to deal with this woman. He said, well, I don't know that she's blind. What if she isn't blind and she just wants it? I said, sir, she's a taxpayer. I told him that the anecdotal evidence is that even if a traffic signal were not all essentially used all by blind people, that there would be some benefit to having an accessible PED signal there or any place else. How do you deal with city bureaucrats that are so intransigent that they are simply and totally not interested? What do we do?
It's a tough question. You want to do everything you can to persuade them that it's a good thing for everybody. Another possible avenue of response is to actually file an ADA complaint. Because if they provided a visual pedestrian signal for a sighted pedestrian, it's my opinion that the ADA, and it's actually, there have been some evidence that's been in some various settlements or responses that it's important that if they provided a visual signal, they need to provide its equivalent for people who are blind or visually impaired, particularly upon request. So if someone requests an accessible pedestrian signal, it's an ADA request. Sometimes it's helpful to write a letter requesting it and saying something that triggers that by saying that because I'm unable to see the visual pedestrian signal, I'm requesting this accessible pedestrian signal be provided for me, which triggers kind of the ADA accessibility in there. There's also in California, there's a different Title 24 regulations that relate to accessible pedestrian signals, and I'm not as familiar with those in just because I'm not in California, but I think there are various ways to tackle it. The other thing that sometimes has worked for people is to use the city government or city commissioners to encourage the traffic engineering people to think about meeting the needs of their constituents.
Kenneth, hi, this is Anisio Correa from Atlanta. One of the things that I've learned today is that this whole area of audio accessible pedestrian signals are still complex. They're not uniform. So what would you say about whether or not there is a need for training of blind people so that they can use these signals when the few APS that are available in their city? Is training available, and are mobility instructors being trained and familiar with those systems so that they can impart that knowledge to the clients?
I wish I could say they were more trained than I think they are. I think that's a great need in our field is to educate both individuals who are blind and orientation mobility specialists about the new types of accessible pedestrian signals because they're a big change. The other part is to educate both groups about how traffic signals work now. Often pedestrians don't get enough time to cross unless they push a button and then cross on the next signal cycle. You have to kind of work a different system than I taught when I first started teaching. And many orientation mobility specialists are still teaching people to maybe not push the button because it messes up their alignment. And I've heard that both from orientation mobility specialists and from individuals who are blind that, I don't want to mess with those buttons. It messes up my alignment. But in truth, if there's only one car, you might only have 7 seconds to cross the street if you don't push the button, while if you push the button, you have 30 seconds. It changes the timing of the signal when you do that. So there's a great need for training, in my opinion, of both orientation mobility specialists and individuals who are blind. That's part of the reason I'm so delighted to be able to speak here tonight is that I was feeling like there's a need to get the word out that these are systems are going in many locations, and they do have very different features that sometimes people need to understand and need some training on how to use. I've found in some of the research that many people who are blind didn't really figure out the tactile arrows very well because they're slightly different shapes of arrows, and maybe they weren't familiar with how an arrow might be pointing or what an arrow truly looked like in a tactile format. So that was true, and also there were some people who thought a locator tone when it got louder meant something, and signals getting louder and softer doesn't mean anything. So there's a great deal of information we do need to get out there. And I've been working on presentations with various groups of orientation mobility specialists, have been talking to a number of ACB groups in terms of state conventions, those kind of groups, and trying as hard as I can to get information out there, as well as writing some articles and getting some publications on the web. There's a publication on accessible pedestrian signals on the web as well, but it's not as geared to information. We're working on trying to provide more training information in the next revision of that, which I'm working on right now.
I've got a quick question here, brought up by what others were saying. I think, David, you were talking about the difference between a state highway and a city intersection, those kind of things. The nearest intersection to where I live that really calls out for an APS doesn't have one. And when I deal with the Department of Public Works here in Watertown, they say, well, that's a state intersection as opposed to a city intersection. And so it means that to advocate for one there, I've got to advocate with a different part of government. And for a number of years, that was their argument why they hadn't put one in. Recently, we were successful at, quite honestly, schmoozing a little bit with DPW. And suddenly they indicated that they were in a position that they could install one on there. The only reason they had held back was they were hoping the state would pay for it. But it didn't turn out to be a barrier to getting it done, just kind of a contest over who was going to get stuck with the bill when it was all said and done. Is there a general rule of thumb for determining whether an intersection is a state intersection as opposed to a city intersection and who has jurisdiction over it? Or do we really have to handle every time two roads cross and do research in that regard?
In my experience, there's no hard and fast rule. There are some states where the state maintains all signals. There are other states where there are certain roads that are state highways that, you know, are the numbered roads or something of that sort. What I've found is the most efficient way to find that out is to call my city traffic engineering department or whatever the jurisdiction you think it is and to ask if they're in charge of the intersection of Grand and whatever, Broad Street. And if they say no, then ask them who you would need to talk to about that intersection. And they usually know the name of someone. And even within, at least in Atlanta, even within the traffic engineering department, there are certain engineers who are in charge of a certain segment of the city. You know, there may be a signal engineer who's assigned to the northeast section of the city, and he's the only one who really you can talk to about that particular intersection if it's in the northeast section. If it's in the southwest section, you got to talk to somebody else. So my experience has been to just call, and even the person who answers the phone, the secretary, of saying you want to know something about the intersection of Grand and Broad and who do you need to talk to, they'll usually put you through to the person who's in charge of that intersection or say, oh, no, that's a state road. You'll have to talk to so-and-so and give you a number. But sometimes you have to pry it out of them, but that actually is, in my experience, the most efficient way to deal with it. Then you have a contact and you may call them the next time to get the name of the person for somewhere else.
In Maryland recently, there was a settlement or an arrangement made where they're literally going to be putting in hundreds of APSs, I think starting in Baltimore and working their way out from there. Are there other examples of the Maryland experience where they were able to get the attention of one set of officials and have a major impact? Or are most of these done on an intersection-by-intersection basis?
Maryland experience is actually the state DOT has been required by a letter, encouraged certainly, by a letter from Federal Highway Administration. There was an ADA complaint filed by the ACB chapter, and it actually only applies to officially the state of Maryland or the Maryland DOT, but Maryland DOT maintains many intersections. They are at this point installing APS on all new intersections and then working a prioritization and request form to install them on other intersections as they've set aside some money for that. And I think that is, you know, completely a result of a complaint filed by the ACB chapter there. There are other cities that have decided to install APS at all new intersections or at all their intersections over time and have a plan to do so. So it varies somewhat, but I think certainly in my experience, the state DOTs have been the slower ones to kind of come along. Sometimes cities have been a little more willing to respond to requests from citizens, while the state DOT has a kind of broader focus on highways a lot of times. So I think that Maryland decision has gotten the attention of some of the people at various state DOTs, and it'll be interesting to see. I had a conversation with the traffic state DOT head traffic engineer in West Virginia, and he indicated that all their new signal installations would have APS as well. So I would say that is happening in some other locations now, and applaud the actions of the Maryland folks that kind of got that letter handed down that then makes the other people sit up and take notice.
This is Pam Drake in Visalia, California. I was very interested in your comments regarding the concerns that some people have and their worries about not being able to tell which way the arrow is going. And I am one who says if I didn't have to mess with those darn buttons, I might have a straighter crossing, because that is an issue with me, or a clearer crossing. And these are on streets where there aren't even APS. Is there any kind of thought to perhaps putting out a booklet or a brochure, a tip sheet for people? Where we are, we barely have enough mobility instructors to teach the students, the school students. So the chances of my getting that kind of assistance, even if I paid for it, are pretty low. So had you thought of maybe putting out some kind of a little, apart from the ACB handbook, which of course is very good, some little guide to safe transit, I wonder, or safe travel, safe pedestrian travel? Had you thought anything about that?
We hadn't actually looked at working on a small brochure or pamphlet. One thing I am working on, I kind of mentioned in passing there, is a revision of the synthesis on accessible pedestrian signals posted on the web at www.walkinginfo.org that I wrote in 2003. We're doing a revision of that, and as we are working on that revision, one of the chapters now is on public education and involves, will have a section on information that people who are blind need to know, information that orientation mobility specialists need to know in order to teach people about accessible pedestrian signals. Hadn't really thought of it, just a small brochure, but it would probably be a really helpful thing to have, a small, short, something that can be posted and available as a much shorter, independent flyer of some sort that could be done as part of this. And maybe I'll we had worked on some public education materials trying to come up with something that could be given to traffic engineers to distribute about accessible signals. And I think that's a good idea, to try and work on something that is really designed for that kind of, for people who are blind, with quick tips on how to use them. Because there are some techniques that I teach in using push buttons, to answer kind of your question about using push buttons, is I always teach people to go to the, particularly if there's an APS, to go to the street first, get familiar with what's there at the corner, how you're lined up, use your typical alignment techniques, listen to the traffic, get it lined up, then kind of find a tactile cue that you can come back to before you go messing around with a push button. Even an accessible one with a locator tone, to go to the street first, past hearing the locator tone, not get your alignment screwed up by going and looking for the button first, but go onto the curb, figuring out your alignment, listen to your traffic, if this is a new intersection particularly, and then pushing the button and knowing what you're coming back to by having kind of figured out a tactile cue. And that's a technique that's new to a lot of people. It's easy to tend to, particularly hearing a locator tone, to turn off and try to push the button on your way by. And my experience has been that doesn't really work very well, that it's better to go and get familiar with where you're crossing before you go back to the button. So that's one of the things we talked about putting in this information we're planning to get out. So it does make sense to make a kind of short informational sheet as well.
In the same way there's a limited number of O&M instructors to go around, there clearly is an even smaller number of individuals with your expertise to assist us. Is there a place we can go? I mean, I have to admit I'm very lucky, because B.Z. Benson, who's been very much much involved in this is here in Massachusetts. So when we had difficulty, the local commission on disability hired her to come out and do an assessment, and we're going to be certainly using that as our primary indicator of what kind of changes have to be made in the install. But let's say that you're Dave and Pam, and you have a similar need. Is there some way we can find individuals who could advise us on dealing with these issues?
Great question, Brian. I didn't even pay you to do it. Several years ago, the Association for Education and Rehabilitation of the Blind and Visually Impaired, otherwise known as AER, their Environmental Access Committee set up regional representatives. And we've been trying to keep those regional representatives up to date and trained and encouraging them to be in touch with orientation mobility specialists, Council of the Blind groups, and try to be available to those groups for support, information, providing assistance if there's an installation going in. We have a listserv so they can get information from others of us if there's a question about specific installation. Those individuals are, their names are posted under the Environmental Access Committee on the AER website, and that website is aerbvi.org. And you have to do a search there for environmental access in order to find the list. But there is a list of the representatives for each region of the country. And there are two representatives in California, one for Southern California, one for Northern. And throughout the U.S., we've tried to have some people available who are aware of the various issues and try to help out where possible. All of these people are volunteer, and so it kind of varies how much time they have to provide. But most are quite willing to put in quite a bit of time, in my experience. So that would be one place to look for assistance, and I'm certainly willing to help people try to figure out other places or put them in touch with people, if at all possible, myself as well.
In that regard, can individuals contact these people? Because we really have, at this point, we have very little in terms of where we are, in terms of organization, the handful of people in our area just weren't interested in keeping a viable chapter. So what we do on our own.
And no, you can contact them as individuals. There's no requirement for them to only work with organizations, and they often have worked with individuals. Sorry if I made that sound like they should, but more I've tried to have them as much as possible give presentations at organizations, but often the contact has, and working with a specific installation or with somebody on request, has been with specific individuals rather than with organizational groups. So please do.
Well, I think that that's been, you know, this thing about the traffic signals has been an education for me, because I've heard about it for quite a while, and I thought it sounded pretty good, but that about the hybrid car thing that Dave mentioned, and that I mean, they're all always new challenges, it seems like, for us to try to conquer.
This is Marlena Lieberg. I wonder, Janet, you may have done this. I've been kind of ducking in and out for the evening, but I wonder if you would mind giving an email address where people might be able to contact you directly.
No, I don't mind at all. The email address for me is jmbarlow@accessforblind.org. JMBARLOW at accessforblind.org. accessforblind.org.
I'm impressed that you can do that at this late hour for you. Thank you.
This is Doug in Daytona Beach. I have a two-part question. First of all, although it may not be directly associated to what you've been doing, can you speak to what's going on with the RIAS initiative that Department of Education was talking about? And second of all, I'm not sure if you're familiar with what's been going on in Volusia County, Florida, with this supposed installation of a program that would have people carry a handheld device using LED or LCD pedestrian signals at each corner.
I'm somewhat familiar with both. I have not been following closely the RIAS initiative and what has happened with that most recently. That was looking at combinations of the RIAS stands for Remote Infrared Audible Signage, and looking at combinations of that in most cases with various types of accessible pedestrian signals, of using the RIAS transmitters or receivers to provide more orientation information in addition to the information provided by the APS. At least that was my understanding from discussions about that plan, was to continue, because of the access board stance and other reasons of accessibility, to provide the street crossing information, the information about the what the visual pedestrian signal is saying in a audible and vibratactile format, in addition to the RIAS information for additional orientation information. I am also familiar with the LED pedestrian signals with handheld transmitters that one company is selling. I have, in my experience, had some difficulty with those receivers providing good information and not having some difficulties with indicating which signal they're for, or keeping a straight line on which signal is provided. I'm not sure how that project is going down there. It does not, in my opinion, meet the access board guidelines, which don't require a blind person to carry something. A sighted person doesn't have to carry in order to get the signal information. The access board has been pretty clear in the draft guidelines they've written that blind people should not have to carry something that sighted people aren't required to carry to access the signal information.
Anyway, in answer to your question about what's going on here, nothing. The apparently company has failed to come up with what they suggested. It was supposed to be a test project, and actually in the past year and a half, absolutely nothing has happened. So I doubt, at this point, I don't know what's going on, but I think probably if we can get the county to do it, we're probably going to be looking at trying to get them to expend the money to put in the traditional APSs.
Sounds like a good idea to me. Get the equipment that's more standard and works for everybody without them having to have a receiver that they keep charged and keep batteries in and have with them at the right time.
I have a question that has bothered me about APSs for years and years. For ever since traffic began, ever since signalization began, it was standard and still is. Red light means stop, green light means go. Doesn't matter where you are in the world, that's the way it is. And, you know, everybody who gets an international driver's license, drives anywhere else, knows the same lights apply. Why can't we get that kind of standardization in terms of audible traffic signals or pedestrian audible or accessible pedestrian signals? Because, after all, the same standards should hold true, I would think.
Boy, it's a good question. I wish that would work, too. In truth, though, traffic signals didn't start out being standardized. It just took a while. It took a while for that to happen as well. I'm hoping we're moving that way here. It's why I mentioned earlier that most of Europe, Sweden, Australia uses a rapid ticking or beeping sound to indicate the walk time. And I think it's partly why the access board has moved towards that as one of the options for the walk interval. They also left the option of speech messages for the walk interval. And I don't know whether they're going to tighten that up in when they get past the draft version or not. But in many ways, I'd like to see them tighten up to make it a rapidly repeating tone indicates walk, and that the location is very important, and not leave the option for locating the push button just wherever you want, and using a speech message or some other kind of code that people have to understand, and that it would standardize it more with what's being used in other countries to use the rapid tone for the walk interval. And I think we'll hear more of that here in the U.S. in the coming time and years, but also need to recognize that, and you know, that is part of the reason I would encourage the use of the tone rather than speech messages. Even though many people think that speech messages are so friendly, it's not friendly to someone who doesn't speak English well or who doesn't hear very well, and the tone is more detectable and more more consistent, just more standardized. So that's the reason I would be kind of an advocate for using the rapid tones as much as possible, as opposed to trying to do various different cuckoos, chirps, teach, this, that, the other thing.
Janet, I'm so happy you were able to be with us this evening and talk to us about
what I would imagine a number of blind people kind of think is a done deal, that it's just a matter of getting them installed and that all the issues associated with APS are cut, dried, and in the can, so to speak. I live in the Northeast, and one of the things that happens in the Northeast is this white fluffy stuff that piles up. And as the snow plows go through my community, they pile up the snow onto the sidewalks, making life very good for drivers, but not very good for us pedestrians. And even when shoveling takes place, and if you're lucky enough to be in a community where they might have a sidewalk snow plow, they tend to plow in the poles with the buttons on them. Is this just unique to my neighborhood, or is this a pretty consistent problem throughout the snow belt?
Thankfully, I don't have to worry about that down here. We just close down if it snows or ices. But it's very much a problem in other communities, and I think it's an area that advocacy is needed. I hate to say it. We still have a lot of work to do to have communities recognize that pedestrians are just as important as cars, and that if they require you to push those push buttons in order to get enough time to cross the street, they need to clear them. And it could be an ADA issue, an accessibility issue, that's a safety issue for you and for other pedestrians. If you can't reach the button, you can't get enough time to cross the street in many signals now. So it's not just a, inconvenience, it's a safety issue. And we need to hold the city's toes to the fire a little on that issue and get them to pay as much attention to pedestrian safety as they do to vehicles and vehicle safety.
I was wanting to know if there's anything being done about the quiet cars are also part of the problem. I tend to think that those coming hand in hand.
I think it is a big issue, and it's one where, again, we've got to be doing more advocacy. I think there have been some various resolutions passed. I know AER has. I know ACB has passed resolutions asking for research and work to be done on solutions for the problem. But as far as I know, there's nothing that's really gotten to the level of, certainly not to the level of funding, but not even to a very high level within Federal Highway Administration in terms of getting their attention as being an issue that needs to be addressed. I think it's sometimes more of a problem even at stop signs than at signals, because car becomes a stealth vehicle. It cruises up to the stop sign and kind of vanishes on you. And you don't hear it again until it's about to run into you as it starts up with accelerating quickly or something. And at signals, at least many times, you have more than one vehicle there. But turning cars and other issues with that, certainly the hybrid vehicles and the fact that when they're stopped, they're silent, but they're also silent if they start up slowly. If they don't accelerate hard, the gas engine doesn't kick in. It is a scary situation, and the gas prices going up and the kind of incentive for people to buy cars that are not as gas hungry is going to mean we're going to see more of them. And I'm not sure what to do about it except to be raising our voices louder about the problem.
Well, again, Janet, I want to thank you so much for being here with us this evening. I hope that our listening audience has learned more about APSs, where we stand with them in terms of their development, their installation, and our responsibilities as consumers who've demanded these and in many cases won them, to assure that they are installed properly and maintained properly, and that we educate ourselves on how to use them, and that our orientation and mobility instructors are educated in how to educate others on the same issue, that is, how to most effectively use the APS in our communities. Again, thank you all for tuning in to tonight's Tuesday Topics. We'll look forward to having you here again next week when we will, I'll leave it up to Paul to determine what the topic's going to be next week, but look for the post in ACB Leadership and ACB Friends and the other lists as we once again get together for another edition of Tuesday Topics.